Once a month, we visit with our partners at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology for a segment we call Underground History. Mark Tveskov and Chelsea Rose of SULA bring in people and stories about archaeology and the intricate and fascinating process of truly unearthing the past. This month, we focus on what archaeologists do with their findings when it's time to publish. Yes, it's still in journals, but those have changed just a bit over time. Let's talk about academic publishing in the internet age. Two guests, in addition to Mark Tveskov, Lynn Hunter-Gamble is the editor of American Antiquity, one of the journals of the Society for American Archaeology. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Good to have you here. Chris Matthews is with us as well. He is the editor of Historical Archaeology, the Journal of the Society for Historical Archaeology. Chris, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks.
And Mark Tveskov back in the studio with us once again. Good to have you.
It's always great to be here.
Lynn, let's start with you. Oldest goes first, and I mean your journal. Your journal is the older of the two. How important is the American Antiquity to the field?
Well, it is really the primary journal for North American archaeology. In the past, it was for all of the Americas. We also publish articles in other portions of the world, but the focus is on North America, and it's considered the flagship journal.
Chris Matthews, give us a thumbnail sketch, if you would, of historical archaeology.
Sure. Historical archaeology is a journal that specializes in the archaeology of the roughly last 500 or so years, or the modern era, lots of different definitions. Its focus is worldwide, but as with American Antiquity, we are, as an American journal, tend to be focused in North America that we're working on expanding.
So for either of these journals, these are the kinds of journals where there has to be extensive peer review before stuff gets in, Chris?
Oh, for sure. Everything that's submitted is reviewed internally by the editorial staff, as well as externally by peers in the field, professors and other professionals.
And Mark Tveskov, why don't you tell us what that can be like? Do you take quite a pounding when somebody's peer reviewing your stuff? Are they firing bullets at your work?
Yeah, that can be a brutal and inspiring kind of process, because people get to say what they think about your work without you knowing who they are. And it's a rigorous process, and you come out of it a little beat up sometimes, but it's always for the best. It makes for a much better paper, for sure.
All right, so that's the basic setup of it, but now let's introduce some of the modern wrinkles that go on with publishing academic journals. Lynn Hunter-Gamble, does American Antiquity feature an online version?
We do have an online version, and we also will publish some articles that are open to everyone, and we're really moving in that direction, and so we'll identify articles that are of more interest to the greater public, and have those more available, and we'll identify those several times a year.
And are those not peer reviewed kinds of things that you're talking about?
No, everything is peer-reviewed
okay.
in American Antiquity, and it's it's an intense peer-review process, and overall, I'd say it works really well because, everybody wants their work peer-reviewed. You do not want to publish things that are inaccurate.
So what are the economics like in this day and age? I mean, I don't know what the revenue stream was in the past for either of your publications and what it might have converted to over time. I mean, certainly when you look at mainstream publications that aren't as specific as things like American Antiquity and Historical Archaeology, they've certainly taken a beating from people just reading their stuff online rather than in the print versions. Chris Matthews, what has been the trend in the academic journals like yours?
Well, speaking for Historical Archaeology, we made the switch from a self-published journal by the Society for Historical Archaeology to now the journal is published by a large publisher called Springer, who does a lot of, it's actually Springer Nature. They do a lot of academic publishing. We did that for a lot of reasons, but one of them was the economics, because what we were doing is we were losing subscribers at the institutional level as university libraries and places like that dealt with their own budgetary issues. They stopped subscribing to journals and started subscribing to a bunch of journals that they get with one subscription with somebody like Springer. So we were losing revenue from that, because that was actually our largest revenue source through the journal was library subscriptions. so we traded that for signing on with Springer, who is paying the society for the pleasure of publishing our journal. So it worked out really well for us because they made up for our lost revenue and then some.
How does Springer make money on that transaction?
They make money off by picking up those library subscriptions, just the ones we gave up and we're losing. They can maintain because they are the kind of client the libraries are more comfortable with, I think, than an individual organization, if you see what I mean.
Oh, I see. So they've got a bunch of publications they can offer all at once with a big
right.
package deal or something like that.
Yeah.
What do you think is the future? I mean, is there going to be a point where there's no longer a print version of American Antiquity and Historical Archaeology?
Lynn Hunter Gamble?
Well, we still have the print versions, and we're in a similar situation. Cambridge University Press is now the publisher for American Antiquity. It's still the Society for American Archaeology that manages it, and they know a lot more about, you know, the revenues and that kind of thing. But I think at least for the near future, people will continue to have hard copies. But we have Society for American Archaeology has three journals, and one of them is Practices in Archaeology, and they are only online, but they're still peer-reviewed. It's still, you know, an academic journal. So we may be moving in that direction, but I haven't heard any rumblings in specific.
This is Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange with Mark Tveskov from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, one of our regular partners. And we have on the phone Lynn Hunter Gamble, who edits American Antiquity. That's one of three journals, as you heard, of the Society for American Archaeology. Chris Matthews is with us as well. He's the editor of Historical Archaeology, the journal of the Society of Historical Archaeology. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 with questions and comments. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. Mark?
Okay. Yeah, so one of the thoughts I had about this topic is, as a professor in a small regional university, I sense sometimes from the students a distrust of what they describe as like legacy media, like the and authority of people like professors in and of themselves. And when I look at the academic publishing world, there's also a lot of new wholly online journals. And thinking about this in relationship to journalism, it's like, how do we, and this is maybe it's a rhetorical question or maybe not, but how do we maintain rigor and also provide access, which is sort of the promise of the internet?
It's a little bit of a tough question. But I think that what we have as we transition to more online content, and I imagine American Antiquity is the same, that after a certain period, all the content is available online through a subscription, say, through a university library. That's the way it was with historical archaeology. We publish in print and online, and then it stays online forever. And so, you know, we maintain the rigor, we maintain the peer review, we maintain the quality of the content no matter what. If students are frustrated by a lack of access to material, I guess what my reaction is that everything is available for us after a three-year, what they call embargo, where it's in order to maintain subscriptions to the current material. But I think that a lot of students find ways around that, especially mm-hmm. if there are other options where, you know, an individual author might share their work independently. I was worried about that when we were first working with Springer, and their response was, we can't police the whole internet. So they do what they can to ensure that access to the material is, you know, beneficial to those who seek it, but also to those who produce it and whose work it is.
So, Lynn Hunter Gamble, you mentioned that everything is still gets peer review, but I have not asked about the economics of the peer review. Who are the peers, and are they compensated in some way?
Well, that's such a good question, because it is something that we are considering. The peer reviewers are basically our colleagues, and we have a database of all the members of the society. In the case of the Society for American Archaeology, when you become a member, you can sign up for one journal as part of your membership, and you receive that, and then you can also have access digitally to the other journals. So we have a huge, a large number of members. I mean, it's in the thousands, and our reviewers are so, I've been thinking about this quite a bit, because we really could not function without the peer review system, because I obviously cannot be an expert in every single aspect of archaeology in North America and elsewhere. And so the problem is that we keep going back sometimes to the same person, because they do good reviews, they get them out in time, and we are thinking of ways we can recognize our reviewers, or I don't know if we'll come to payment or anything like that, or if we could give them, you know, a free subscription to one of the other journals that, you know, they could receive the hard copy for, something like that. But yeah, we rely on them, and I'd say Most colleagues do an excellent job. I am just amazed. I mean, they will write pages about how to improve a document, and oftentimes highly constructive comments.
So the peers ultimately in a peer review don't generally get compensation.
That's right. They don't. And this is a lot of time. I mean, it can take quite a bit of time. I mean, I know some reviewers who will look things up, and yeah, we really rely on the generosity of experts who are donating their time and expertise. And, you know, this is really important for junior scholars too, so that they, you know, they can learn how to do a better job. And I really appreciate the constructive comments that many of our peer reviewers provide.
Mark Tveskov, how difficult can that be if you're doing your own academic work, you're taking a course load, you got research, and then somebody says, hey, can you peer review this article?
Well, it's obviously a burden of time and effort, but I think many academics would say this, that they see it as their ethical responsibility. I mean, it's a self-policing process, and that the whole philosophy behind it is that we have to watch each other in a respectful but rigorous way. And so so you are ethically bound to do your part to peer review your peers to make science work the way it does writ large.
We are talking about the science of archaeology once again in underground history with Mark Tveskov from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, one of our regulars. And we have here to talk about scholarly journals and in archaeology, Lynn Hunter Gamble, who edits American Antiquity, which is a journal of the Society for American Archaeology, and Chris Matthews, who edits Historical Archaeology, the journal of the Society for Historical Archaeology. In doing research, this gets to be a really fascinating subject matter about what becomes of academic journals and the quality of stuff. I mean, what Mark, for example, does open access mean for a scholarly article?
Well, to my understanding, and this is a fairly new thing, is it part of the economics of publication is the internet and the easy dissemination of articles in the form of PDFs. So there's an option where you could essentially pay to play by putting forward a money that, if I understand it correctly, takes away the issues of copyright, that you have the right as the author to distribute the article in any way that you see fit.
Is that a process either of you, Chris or Lynn, are familiar with?
Sure. It's often associated with the funder, and because the fees for open access can be thousands of dollars. Because essentially the publisher is recouping the possible value of that article by giving it away. But oftentimes that's open access is an expectation of a funder, and it's much more common in Europe with state funding. And the state funders are saying, you know, we're going to fund this research, but it has to be freely available to everyone. But they will then pay that fee. And so it kind of works out that way. Since we've signed on with Springer, we've never had anybody request open access. It's not very common on our side.
Well, that's an interesting point. So no one has ever put forward that? No one, American archaeologist, has done that?
Correct.
And now we ask our authors to determine what type of open access they would like once we have accepted their article. And there are different tiers. There's gold and green, and it's a bit complicated, and you have to pay for the gold, but for the green, I believe it is, at least with American Antiquity, you do not pay for it, but you do not have the same privileges. You can post that, I believe, on your own website, or the institution that is publishing it.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating to see on social media sites peer-reviewed or supposed peer-reviewed journal articles posted that become almost the de facto circulated version of it that have like editor's markup on it as a means, presumably the authors are getting around the copyright issue.
Right. Yep. They, you know, one of the final stages is you receive a proof of your article, and so people are posting those proofs because they are not the final copy. They oftentimes do not have the page numbers either.
So it seems like the system as it has existed thus far is a filter of sorts that any research that is undertaken and submitted as, hey, look what I found, is going to end up going through this process of the journals before it gets to the public. So somebody else has had a chance to look at it and say, well, here's where this is shaky, or this is what else we need to know here. Is there any danger of that system going away or changing in a way where people get a straight shot to the public without having to go through this filter?
This is why, you know, certain journals are highly respected, and we can teach our students and others, you know, that the material that's published in, you know, both of our journals and many others, like Science, we can go on and on, that you have a better trust of what's been published because of this rigorous peer review process. You know, anybody can put anything on the internet.
Yeah, but that's a real issue. And I was saying to Jeffrey before we went on air that if you survey undergraduate students today, there's an alarming number of them that believe that the moon landing was a hoax, as an example. And that's the power of that open source internet for dissemination of information that we're sort of competing with.
Yeah, it's a problem. And I think we just, you know, professors, we teach our students, you know, how to conduct a proper search, and I think other people are doing that in all kinds of fields, like doctors, you know, warn their patients that they need to go to good websites and things like that.
And so, you know, it was interesting. We had a discussion this week with a researcher who did some work on how Russian bots and trolls got involved on Twitter in ginning up the vaccine debate, and even though the feelings in the country may be 80-20 pro-vaccine, all they had to do was go out and make it look like 50-50 to really kind of cloud the waters a bit. I just wonder if there's any sort of concern about publications from people working in the field of archaeology heading that way, getting obscured by other people's work.
I think we've always had to deal with what we call pseudo-archaeology, and people have published books and you know, they'll say the Nazca lines in Peru were for space people to land their spaceships, and so this has always been out there, and so in some ways it's not that new.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly more available because of the internet, and I think we just have to continue to educate people.
All right. It does happen bigger and faster through the internet. That is for certain in the age of social media. We have been talking to Lynn Hunter Gamble, the editor of American Antiquity. That's one of three journals of the Society for American Archaeology. Chris Matthews is the editor of the journal Historical Archaeology, which is coming from the Society for Historical Archaeology. Mark Tveskov is the director of the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Thanks, as always, for bringing great underground history topics and guests to us on The Exchange.
You're welcome. It's a privilege.